My guest at this time is Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King, who represents the Hawkeye State's 4th Congressional District, and he's a longtime member of the House Judiciary Committee. He is also very skeptical of the immigration reform bill introduced on Thursday by the so-called Gang of Eight up on the Senate side of Capitol Hill, 4 Republicans and 4 Democrats, focusing on a number of things. But the hallmark, of course, is a 13-year pathway to citizenship. There's also attention, according to Senator Rubio, towards border security, reforming the visa system, legal immigration reforms, and so forth. So we want to get the congressman's thoughts on all of this. And, sir, thanks so much for being with us.
Sir, I'm happy to be on. Good to be back with you, Greg. It really is.
It's good to have you back with us. And I know before we even get to the specific components here, we've had guests on in the past, yourself included. Just talked to Senator Lee of Utah not too long ago. And a lot of folks are saying we need to do this one piece at a time rather than in one huge bill like this. And perhaps if we did that, we could get more accomplished. Is that your approach on this as well?
Well, it's close to that. And the big comprehensive amnesty plan is a disaster and a big mistake. And there's much can be said about the components of that piece by piece. But I think it's a step back from even Senator Lee's statement and suggest, what are we trying to fix here and why? That we have an executive branch problem, not a legislative branch problem. The President of the United States has refused to enforce immigration law with which he disagrees. And so he's seeking to write his own by executive edict. And he has, to some degree, done so. He's being litigated, but he's done so. And now I'm hearing Republicans say, well, if we're ever going to have enforcement of the border, we have to make this agreement with the President and the Democrats. Are we ever going to have border security? And when I read this bill, I wonder, what's the point in having border security if you're going to legalize anybody that can come into America that is here and send an invitation to those that have been deported to apply to come back in? That's what we're dealing with here. So maybe a smaller way at this. I'm worried that the House might pass a single piece of legislation that does make sense, like permanent or mandatory E-Verify. But it becomes the conference vehicle for a Senate amnesty plan. And if the leadership House and Senate appointed a conference committee, they would send us back. There's a risk that they would send us back a comprehensive amnesty plan for an up or down vote in the House where every Democrat would vote for it, a handful of Republicans would, and it would go to the president's desk, and it would be an irreversible thing.
So is your position, Congressman, that if we just would actually go back to the 1986 bill and some of these other provisions in other years where there were border security provisions that are just not being enforced, that essentially a big chunk of our problems would be taken care of?
I would just say this. If I had Janet Napolitano's job and I wasn't tied down by a leash from the president, I could give you something like 98 or 99% border control. Border security and border control, operational control of the border, I could do that with the resources we're spending now. And so if I can tell you that, then I don't know what we're trying to accomplish here other than just why don't we utilize the laws that we passed and the resources that we have. We passed a Secure Fence Act. We've got something like 36 miles of double fencing, and that was to build altogether 854 miles. Which would have been a net 700 miles of border once you, because there's a lot of crooks in it. That's not done. The forces on the other side that want open borders, they didn't want to close the border, and they don't want to have immigration enforcement. And this is a political battle that's going on, and so far the rule of law side hasn't been winning.
In your statement responding to the Gang of Eight bill, you have said that it is aggressive and outrageous amnesty. It is instant legalization of all illegal immigrants in the United States, with very few exceptions. Their argument would be that it's this long, arduous process, takes 13 years. If you've got a criminal background, you wouldn't even be in that process. And they say by getting these folks out of the shadows, as they phrase it, you get them on the record, you get them paying taxes, and they contribute more to the system that right now they're kind of essentially the beneficiaries of but don't contribute to. How do you respond to all that?
Well, first, I would say in the bill, they have to pay a fine. That's supposed to be the replacement for the penalty for unlawful entry into the United States or visa overstay. That's a $500 penalty fee. That's good for 6 years, and then you can renew it for another 6 years for another $500. So the cost to stay in the United States to get legalized is $83.33 a year. That's one of those onerous provisions that they point out. And then they're going to do background checks. Now, you can't do background checks on people without sitting down and having trained investigators doing interviews with them. The background check they're talking about will be perhaps. Now, I can't quite imagine that they're going to run the prints of 12 to 20 million people here. But if they do, that's probably the best we could hope for. Those prints would be run through NCIC and ICE's database. That's National Crime Information Center as a database. And if they have been convicted of a felony or, let's just say, triple misdemeanors, then they will be inadmissible. Those folks are not going to come forward. And the 86th Amnesty Act, only about half of the people that were eligible came forward, but a whole lot of people that weren't did, and there was 70% fraud in that system. 800,000 to a million people became 3 million people. And so the whole pattern of this, the whole history of this bill simply opens it up even more. It doesn't tighten down. It doesn't learn from our mistakes in the past. It doubles down and triples and quadruples down on the mistakes in the past. I'm not speechless, but I'm having a hard time explaining how it is that otherwise smart people could come to these conclusions.
What do you sense are the dynamics specifically within your own party right now, Congressman? We saw this report from the RNC looking back at the 2012 elections. Obviously, Hispanics broke mostly for Democrats, so they specifically, the RNC specifically, endorsing comprehensive immigration reform. They didn't specify what ought to be in it. We also saw reports in the last week or so that Speaker Boehner is not necessarily committing to have a majority of his own conference in tow on some of these major pieces of legislation. Yet I know that you and Congressman Gohmert, Congressman Rohrabacher, and several others are working hard to make sure that this is not a rubber stamp on this issue. But where's the momentum right now?
Well, just here's how I've watched this, is that they built this momentum right after the election. The RNC report, the Priebus report, or the post-mortem report, however you want to describe it, was not based on sound logic. That 44% of the Hispanic vote that in that report they claimed George Bush got in his 2004 election, he did not receive that. Any objective scrutiny of that number takes you down to no more than 40%, most likely between 38-40% of the Hispanic vote. You could ask the question, could George Bush receive 44% of that vote today? And that answer, I think, is probably and very likely no. So they leap to a conclusion and then build a generalized case around it. But the mood in the conference today over the last 2-3 weeks is this, that a lot of people kept their powder dry and watched what was happening, somehow hoping that it wasn't going to emerge. And I'm one of those. I held back a long time. I didn't want to get involved in a national immigration debate, and I didn't want to have one. But as the Gang of Eight rolled out their bill, and I could see that nobody was taking the lead in the House, even went so far as one of the leadership's voices almost taunted the conservatives in that, you know, we wouldn't do anything, we wouldn't speak up, and they specifically mentioned myself and Louie Gohmert. And so I decided, let's meet, let's talk, let's plan, let's take action, because we can't let this thing sweep through unopposed. And now I'm seeing that how people come up to me and whisper in my ear, they'll say, and I'm talking about members, I'm with you, I'm just not ready to go out that far publicly yet, but keep doing what you're doing and I'll do what I can do. That's just one of the pieces, but there are many others that are now starting to speak up. And I think we're building a strong coalition of resistance in the House that has an opportunity to fight off what might come from the Senate. So that's where it sits today, and I'm just watching it move, and I think the people that thought they had a clear path to amnesty are now starting to wonder if they can succeed.
Congressman, does it make it that much harder on your own side of the aisle when a conservative favorite like Marco Rubio is the leading spokesman, or will this ultimately boil down to ideas?
No, it makes it harder. I like Marco Rubio. I personally like him a lot, and I count him as a friend, and the conversations that we've had and the speeches that I've listened to him give, and I don't know if he's ever listened to any of mine, but it resonates with me. And yet when I see the arguments that are being made, I just wonder if he didn't get so far into this argument and somehow the Schumers and the Menendezes of the world found a way to, Durbins, found a way to close the door behind him. I think he's probably in it so far he can't get back out. And he'd like to go through with this, but I cannot track the logic. It doesn't seem to be it's not a path that I cannot follow it logically. So it's hard for me to be gentle about my criticism when I like a man and I see him do something like this.
Congressman, just a minute or so left here, and obviously there's a lot yet to see how this will play out in both the Senate and potentially the House. Real quickly, you've been rumored, and I think you've confirmed that you're closely contemplating a run for the Senate for the open seat that Senator Harkin will be vacating next year. What's your timetable on that, and what factors will ultimately make up that decision for you?
Well, I haven't set that timetable on a decision. It looks like there's a relatively open path to the nomination, at least today. And I have done statewide polling and gotten a look at it. I've said from the beginning, it's a slight uphill battle. I know that. I know what it takes to win. I can see the path to victory. And there's some significant components that we need to put together to say yes. And they all seem to be doable. But on the other hand, all of the systems aren't go. So right now it's a 50-50 and unknown on when the decision would be. But hopefully it's sooner rather than later, because many others need to have that kind of information so they can make their plans.
Certainly true. And obviously you're not only considering that, but obviously a major fight on immigration and certainly other issues before the Congress as well. Sir, always a great pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for your time.
It's mine. Thank you, Greg.
Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King represents his state's 4th Congressional District. He's also a longtime member of the House Judiciary Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.